Broadcasting from Inauguration Day, this is the Coin Rejects episode 56. And we're back.
Happy New Year.
I am sitting around, I don't know, the Capitol Rotunda with my fellow rejects.
The crypt.
Yeah, the crypt.
Yeah.
Straight out of the beast.
I'm Brandon.
I went in there last week and I just haven't found my way back out.
We have Brandon. We have Jordan. We have Ian.
I'm Brandon. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, is this the first episode of 2021?
This is the first episode of 2021. If you want to find us on the web, we are at coinrejects.com. On Twitter, we are coinrejects. On Instagram, we are coinrejects. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, we are at
503-766-2263.
And we have a voicemail.
I have one of those.
Hey, Coin Rejects. It's Roger calling from Toronto again. Okay, you guys are experts in the culture of our hobby, and so all due respect. Just a cultural question for you guys. I watched Fistful of Quarters back in the day, and just this afternoon I discovered that there was a kind of an unofficial sequel. I missed it. It was 2009, Man versus Snake, like the whole Mibler tournament thing. And I just have to ask you guys, maybe the humor eludes me, maybe there's some nuance that, you know, I'm not in tune with, but, you know, do these guys know that this is cheesy? Like, is it like a Mentos commercial where the viewer asks themselves, like, is this like legitimate European humor, or do the producers of these commercials know that it's cheesy and over the top and campy and all that? So I'm just wondering, like, do these guys realize, like, are they seriously into this much? I mean, you know, people that play these video games and won these titles, you know, 10, 12 years ago, and are like being portrayed as gurus and almost like god minds on this. Like, I get it. It's a cool accomplishment. I love classic gaming. No disrespect. But this is so over the top. I just love to hear you guys discuss it on the show. Like, do these guys know that this is kind of a joke? Like, they're referring to crowds of people at these video game conventions, like crowds of people and the fame and the allure. And it's like, in the camera angle, you see like four people, like all social misfits, standing in the background giggling with their mullets and their pimply skin. And like, they're referring to these as crowds, you know, like it's a, you know, like it's a U2 concert or something. Like, it's just, love to hear your perspective on whether these guys know that this is cheesy. Anyway, keep pumping out the great content. Cheers.
A lot to unpack there.
Thanks for the call.
Let me unpack my mullet. Give me a minute.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. I like your calls. Appreciate the questions and keep them coming. I think this is good stuff to talk about.
Roger, yeah. The inventor of the long splendor sprite.
Yeah.
The first time I saw King of Kong, I really liked it. I still really like the movie. I'll say, I don't know if he's saying that King of Kong is not a good movie, but I really enjoyed that movie, and that was the first time that I realized there was a high score scene. This was before I started collecting games. I just had my Joust, and yeah, I really enjoyed that movie, and I had no idea that that scene was out there. So I think it came out in 2007-ish. But yeah, for that movie, I really liked it. I also really like Man vs. Snake. So
I bet you do.
So I don't have too much shit to talk about the movies necessarily. I do think I did find it odd that there was such a big scene around the high scores that surprised me, and how people were so into it and kind of had their identities tied to some of these high scores. But yeah, both of those movies I enjoyed, so I can't talk too much shit about those movies.
That's a fair perspective.
That's just a cop out.
It is a cop out.
Plus, Don Bluth did the art for the poster for Man vs. Snake, which is kind of cool.
I would say that's the one redeeming quality.
Brandon, do you want to unload, or?
I don't know. I guess I'll talk about it. Okay, go ahead.
All right.
I'll just pick up the pieces if you forgot anything.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. I think the core question is, are the people in the high score scene self-aware? And I would say, by and large, no. A friend of mine had this phrase he used to use, which is computer famous, which just means, like, if you're into programming and technology and you hear someone's name, you're like, oh yeah, them, they're way famous. And anyone who's not super involved in that scene would just give you a blank stare and have no idea. High score dudes are the same way. They're like famous in a very small niche, and that being the only fame they can get, they're very excited about it. That's my take. And as far as the films go, like, I think I haven't seen Man vs. Snake, but I think King of Kong is, that's King of Kong subtitled A Fistful of Quarters. I think it's an enjoyable movie, but a great deal of what makes it fun is clown shoes, right? Like, clown shoes are funny because the clown doesn't know he's wearing them and trips over them. And that's the same deal with everyone in that movie. It's like, they're very serious, but you having a different perspective and not taking it as seriously creates this gap, which is what drives a lot of why the film is interesting. So I think that's basically it from my perspective.
Wow, that's very respectful. I like the first movie. I actually don't think it's really a sequel, is it? So it has nothing to do with it, but it's kind of like more on the higher production side, maybe. Is that why it's kind of considered a... I don't know. Is it? It's not. It's not.
Is it higher production value on that one?
I haven't seen it.
No. I just meant, I don't know why you're considering it like the next...
Oh, the sequel?
Sequel or whatever. Maybe because it's about a single title or something. But
a similar setup.
Yeah.
Well, does it know about Chasing Ghosts or High Score or some of the other... our video game high score chasing documentaries that are out there? There's a whole nother world maybe to be explored.
Maybe. I enjoyed the King of Kong movie, but Man vs. Snake is not as good, I don't think. The redeeming quality is the Don Bluth artwork. That's boss.
yeah.
As far as like the crowds at conventions, that doesn't exist. It's like if you've gone to local... We have the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, for example, and the arcade portion of it is a small portion, right? It's and the tournament portion within that, I guess, is kind of non-existent, but the majority of the video game conventions are just that, for video games, not arcades. So if anything, it's just your local group of friends, to where I guess you could be considered a celebrity. I don't know. Maybe not. But yeah. I don't know. I think it's cool to have a high record of a game, but I don't really... Yeah, I don't fucking know.
Well,
It's not...
I think the thing is, there's a difference between having a record and having your identity be tied up with having the record, right? And
yeah.
Like, if you think about Billy Mitchell, his entire persona is defined by having these high scores, and if it weren't for that, he'd just be some dude making shitty hot sauce. So, like, that's what I'm saying about, like, they're computer famous and clown shoes. They're very wrapped up, their sense of identity, in those particular accomplishments, and I think that's unhealthy.
Yeah. Isn't he known for cheating now? I thought he was known for cheating now, since he's all of his shenanigans.
Since he got caught.
Yeah. I'd like to get some donated Billy Mitchell hot sauce so I could review them, coins up, coins down.
I hope you have a food taster after this episode.
Or toilet paper.
Yeah.
I might need some more toilet paper, but I don't think too much about it. I kind of feel the same way that Roger does, where it's kind of silly and a joke, but I don't dig... I guess I do dig deep into it sometimes if the person's an asshole that has the high score, but it's just another part of the hobby. Like we talked about before, there's collecting, there's restoring, there's playing, there's like the high score people that, you know, a lot of them don't even collect games. They just are really good at games and they just drop it and play something. It's just another facet of the hobby. And
yeah. And then there's shit talkers like us.
Yeah. And there's shit talkers. I like the high score people that are humble about, like Ian said, they don't let it define them, right? I think that's a good way to go about your life. But
I think you could get caught up in the moment of winning a tournament and celebrate. I don't see there's anything wrong with that, really, you know, but
I agree.
Yeah, but that's different. But
I'm just saying, like, totally. there are plenty of local dudes who, like, I think we all know, who are just good guys who are into playing games really well, but it's not their whole identity. They're well-rounded people, and you can talk to them about other stuff. Whereas, like, I cannot even imagine having a conversation with Billy Mitchell that didn't revolve around him.
Agreed. That's just his persona, though. That's not him in real life.
Yeah, you know, maybe he's not an egomaniac or narcissist or, you know, any of these terms. But, yeah, I would say I probably watched every documentary on Arcade High Score once, but I like watching documentary films, so that's kind of one of the things I do like to watch when I watch things, and, you know, it's up my alley. I'm definitely not a high score player, but I've known a few. And, yeah, for the most part, they're just people who happen to be good at video games. Like Ian said, those documentaries, some of what makes them as popular, well, you know, Fistful of Quarters was definitely the most popular one, I think, and the best. It was probably done the best. I knew non-arcade people telling me about this movie. How funny it was, how what a great deal it was, and they had no idea that, one, that games from the 80s even existed still, and two, that people were adults and really fucking serious about getting these scores and still, like, competing with each other. So, you know, it grabbed the attention of casuals, and that's pretty cool, and I think that's good for the hobby. And if any other, you know, Man vs. Snake or anything else that comes out after that does the same thing, I think that's also great. And yeah, sure, you can laugh when you. I think I was watching something the other day. It wasn't an e-sport, but it was. God damn it, what was it? It was some kind of new sport of some sort.
X Games.
No,
XFL.
It was. Sport. It was
Double Dare.
So it was in France, and it was it was fucking Jedi fighting. It was these dudes. It was like
Star Wars kid.
It was basically cosplay lightsaber fighting, and somehow it made it to Mexican television. That's where I was watching it, and they
maybe
were
that's all it ended up at.
I think it was on Extremo. Anyhow. They're talking about how it was like the next biggest thing. And then you know, they were filming it in such a way where you wouldn't really see the crowd. It was more like kind of an 80s music video where they make it look like there's a big crowd, but really there's like 12 people out there. And when the camera did actually pan out, you did see that it was like, you know, four or five people in the crowd. And that's kind of like if you ever go to a live high score tournament, that's what you're going to see. It's like the people's friends, you know, coming by once in a while. I think I've been somewhere where there's places where there's a Kong off going on, you know, like that's the thing, you know, that's still going on. And it's just like, you know, you might walk by once in a while and see how your buddy's doing, whatever. You know, it's not like there's crowds and crowds of people like cheering them on. But
well, especially some of these games are, you have to marathon them for quite a long time. So you're talking about hours and hours and hours. So maybe somebody's going to hang around for like 20 minutes or something, but they're not going to be there like 5 hours in.
Nobody's woo! 40 hours.
Cheers. That's a good point. The production of these films glorifies playing games because you're not going to fucking sit there and watch someone for hours. It's fucking boring. Like,
God, that has been. I was just because even when people stream on Twitch, like when they have like the 100 million Robotron gauntlet, you know, you might pop in every once in a while and watch them for a bit. Or if, you know, Larry DeMar's on there in the chat room or something, there's incentive to be on there and interact. But otherwise, you know, it's just, oh, yeah, pop in. Oh, they're on level 57 now. Okay, cool. They're doing good.
Yeah, the only person having fun is the person playing, pretty much, I guess.
And maybe they're having fun after 10 hours. I'm not sure.
Or are they? This is it's type 2 fun, right? Are you familiar with the notions of type 1, type 2, type 3 fun?
No.
Okay, so type 1 fun is fun while you're doing it. Type 2 fun is horrible while you're doing it, but it's fun in retrospect. And I think marathoning an arcade game is just like that. Like, the actual process of playing it is probably fucking terrible after an hour. But like, if you get the high score, you're like, hell yeah, okay, that was fun. And type 3 fun is not fun at all.
I would think with the title Man vs. Snake, it'd be fun while you're doing it, right? type 1
fun.
Yeah, I think with these documentaries, I agree, like King of Kong, good production, and it was enjoyable. And it, and Jordan's right, like there's more talk about that movie from non-gamers than any of the documentaries I've ever seen. All the other ones are just kind of fall by the wayside. And the thing with these movies is that, you know, as collectors and actually some of us that know some of these people in these movies, we don't think too hard about it. I think we laugh because it's kind of like ridiculous, or we watch it in the background and enjoy it, but we don't really think too hard about it. You know, I, that's how I feel. Just a good background movie or something fun to watch, but I really don't think too hard about it.
Man vs. Snake is not going to appeal to casuals because no one has ever fucking heard of Nibbler, right? But everyone has heard of Donkey Kong. Yeah. So if you put those two movies up with the same group of people, like, everyone's going to go for King of Kong because they actually know what it's like. And maybe they've played the game and had their ass kicked at it.
Yeah. And Nibbler's a shitty game, so.
Yeah.
And Donkey Kong.
No position on Nibbler, except that it is drastically less popular.
Brian had it for a while, didn't you? You never played it at Brian's house?
Mm-hmm. I had it, yeah.
Very challenging. Played
it. I think you told it before I ever came over.
It has the Missile Command syndrome, where it tops out really quick, and then it gets real fucking hard, and it's just one of those games that I don't think it's good in the small collection.
Yeah,
the big collection is probably great, but yeah.
I think there's some definite patterns you can do on that one, so if you just keep doing the patterns, even though it's going faster and faster, you know, you'll be okay. I think. I never learned the patterns.
All right. Another, do we have some emails?
Oh, yeah. Let's move it.
Some email.
Thanks for calling, Roger.
Yep.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Keep them coming.
All right. My voice is kind of going out. I'm going to read the shorter one, and then someone else can read the longer one. So this one's from John D. Hey, guys. I've been hobby operating pinball machines for the last 6-ish years, and I've just gotten into operating vids. From my limited experience so far, it seems like simultaneous multiplayer games do well in the arcade and bar setting. What are some of your favorite multiplayer games from the 80s and 90s? Any underrated ones you suggest pursuing?
I can do the 80s because it's really easy.
Yeah, there's like three.
Yeah, there's Space Duel, there's Warlords, there's Joust, and there's Mario Brothers.
Wizard of War.
What about Sprint?
Are you really gonna be doing any multiplayer games with fucking the pandemic shit?
So that's
what great. About? I got one on here that I think you missed.
What's that?
Hattrick.
Ooh, nice one.
That's
a hockey game.
Ice overrated.
Two player. No, it's not overrated. It's a great game.
It's an underrated, overrated game.
What's the under over on that one?
You shouldn't have forgotten that because I've had a lot of fun playing Hattrick with Brian.
That's right.
Yeah.
Also, there's Demolition Derby. Is a good one.
Hard to find, though.
Yeah, the four-player.
Four-player.
And the two-player.
That game is boss.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's two-player as well, right? Obviously not as fun.
And what about Ivan Stewart's Off-Road?
Yep.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of black and whites because you have to play two players on a lot of them.
Yeah, I was thinking 70s. There's a bunch that I couldn't remember them all.
Pretty much every other one would be
the sprint games.
Anti-aircraft.
And Super Sprint. For
Le Mans. All the racing games.
I don't know. In the arcade, it seems like when I think of multiplayer, Joust. Joust is really good. I don't know about number one, but it's really, really good.
Yeah, and definitely one of the early ones for the 80s.
Yeah, and I agree with Jordan. Mario Brothers. I remember when me and Brian played that down at Coin Jam. Or not Coin Jam. Was it Coin Jam or was it Quarter World?
I think it was Coin Jam.
That was so fun. Like I still think that that's one of the funnest games I've had for a while.
Yeah, really like Mario Brothers.
And you don't necessarily need the wide body to enjoy it, which is cool too. So
yeah, so I think that covers most of the 80s stuff. 90s, you start getting into the really samey beat 'em up and linked racer type games.
Oh yeah, driving games. Yeah,
I would say of the linked racers, by far, far and away, my favorite is Hydro Thunder. I really, really like Hydro Thunder. I would like to own one of those someday. Just because it's you're racing boats instead of cars. All the other ones, you're racing cars, so it stands out a little bit. I appreciate that. And then beat 'em ups, I feel like they're all the same, and you just got to pick one that fits the theme of wherever you're at. Like, if it's a fucking hick bar, then you go put the Cowboys of Moo Mesa up in there.
Sunset whatever. Riders, or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the 90s shit's where it gets hard. 80s, like, there's a lot of them are good. Like you said, Wizard of War is, like, fucking awesome because you can do co-op and, like, Joust, right? You choose to do co-op or versus. That ability is cool.
Same as Mario Brothers, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the cool thing about the 80s stuff. If you're operating and you're going to be spending money or trying to make money, I wouldn't go with the obscure stuff like Wizard of War. I think sticking with the classics like Mario Brothers, although if you're going to have that alongside 90s stuff, I know anymore, I don't know how much those are going to earn, to be honest. But I think Joust and Mario Brothers would be strong 80s titles.
If you can keep Warlords going, I mean, that's a buck a pop if you get four people playing, and it doesn't last very long.
I think I like the idea of Mario Brothers just because Mario still has name recognition, like, even with the current gen of kids.
Yeah.
So I feel like that makes people more inclined to drop a quarter in it than some game they've never heard of.
We also forgot Rampage.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of a hybrid of the 80s, 90s, right? Where that's like a buy-in game, too. So that, yeah,
it's kind of going into the 90s.
That might be
late 80s, 89 or whatever.
It does have the Rock movie going for it, I guess.
Gauntlet, that's a quarter meter. Is that the first quarter meter? I don't know.
Yeah, it Gauntlet's might be a good one.
Yeah, if you think about it, though, right? He's operating pinballs, so a lot of the new pinballs, they're highly targeted towards a certain audience, and they've done their market research. Boomers. So, yeah. if you apply that methodology to video games, like I said, sticking with those recognizable names in the 90s stuff, if you think about it, you know, Stern just released a Turtles, you know, TMNT pinball. It's not that good, but a lot of, you know, people our age, that show was out. And so a lot of arcades you'll see, or barcades, will have the four-player Turtles, right? Or you see that a lot in barcades. They always have Turtles. Jordan, you mentioned Smash TV. Like, that game is fucking awesome. I love that game.
A good one, yeah.
NBA Jam, I think, would be real fucking awesome. There you
go. NBA Jam. Arch Rivals, I like, but most people probably wouldn't.
Yeah, I think Arch Rivals might be a little too
pigskin
dated.
Those are 80s, right? They might be 90. I don't know. They're late 80s, Pigskin and Arch Rivals.
I think I would skip the sports ones in the 80s and might as well buy the modern equivalents on those ones.
I guess the other thing is he's operating, so he wants money. So, do quarter munchers like Turtles and, you know, where you just continue to keep going. Simpsons. Same stuff.
Yeah, NBA Jam's good with that because you have to pay per, is it like every two quarters or something? Like every two basketball quarters, not money quarters.
Yeah, I track you.
Yeah, I think those core, like Midway dominated the 90s arcades.
Yeah.
So like all the sports late shit.
Early 90s for sure.
Yeah. You know, I have a soft spot for Daytona, even though it's not the best graphics wise, but you could link like 8 or 9, or maybe I think almost up to 12 Daytonas. I don't think you'd ever do that, but
that's the one I was trying to think of in my head when Ian was talking about link drivers was Daytona. That's the one that does it for me.
So yeah, like if you have a NASCAR crowd, you could do that, I guess, but you have to be picky and choosy, though, because that's, you know, Sega hardware, those monitors and those machines, if you've ever gone in arcades, are always all shitty. And I would have OCD with having like 3 to 4 in a row and everyone being a different tint. That would drive me nuts.
Isn't that the way they're supposed to be?
Yeah.
You're all wearing different visor on your helmet. That's all.
Yeah. San Francisco Rush is pretty popular, too, or was. But yeah, operating, you want to stick with the Midway. I think the Midway stuff would be good because it's all basically JAMA shit too, right? So it's easy to.
Yeah.
The parts are just cheap, and if you really want to, I guess you only said 80s and 90s, but I won't mention anything more modern. But
a fighter. If you got people who want to fight each other, then they have like tournaments and stuff. I think those have been popular. I think Coin Jam always had maybe Ground Control too. I think like a night a week where they'd have some kind of fight tournament, Street Fighter type thing.
Yeah.
good.
The best
on your crowd, I guess.
Yeah, you know, get one of the since you said 80s and 90s, I would get Third Strike. It's the best Street Fighter, and I guess my second favorite is Hyper Fighting. You know, Turbo. Yeah, you can go anywhere with those titles, or just look up a bunch of other barcades in the United States and just buy what they have. That might be a good one too.
I guess another option could be a Red Tent, because that's you can do versus, right? Like a tennis or something like that. One person on one side, one person on the other.
Yeah. I think, you know, depending on how much space you have, you got to think about that too.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't want to go with some of the obscure ones we've mentioned. If you have a small footprint you need to fill, you need to get really popular titles in there.
Yeah, you need to get like the Simpsons or the Turtles, where you can jam four people in front of one cabinet.
Atari football, X's and O's.
Yeah, right. That'll be like the most popular beer stand in your location if you do that.
Yeah. I think a championship sprint is a good one too. If you could like three player championship sprint is always super a fun game. Sprint.
Or Iron Man off road, because you can get player. Three player.
Three.
Yeah.
There's probably some dumb one that we're missing, but
Danny Sullivan's Indy Heat.
That one's not as good, but
yeah, because it's Iron Man without jumps, so it's like or Nitro. So it's like
I thought about that game. I saw it a lot at CAX Panic Park, where you have these two huge levers that you're like bashing together in order to.
They have that at Avalon Theater, you know.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's super fun.
Me and Misty played that for a while, and it was that was really fun. Of course, it was in one of those shitty old the 90s when they did the projection screen ones, and it was all shitty, like, you know.
I think those are hard to find. I don't think that's an easy game to get.
It's an import. It's an import only.
I just thought I'd mention that one. I think they would. Didn't they do like? I remember them doing tournaments with it at California Extreme.
Yeah.
And they would like hit the players with like pool noodles and like blow fans in their face and stuff like that to distract them.
Talk about man versus snake. Your fucking bust out your pool noodle.
Check out my pool noodle.
No. Yeah, let me unzip and bust out my pool noodle.
All right. Well, I hope that gives you some ideas, John. John D.
Let us know
what you choose. You've been thinking about your pool noodle?
Yeah. I had an NBA Jam for a while. It was actually in a Smash TV cabinet.
You should have converted it back.
I thought about it, but then I was dumb back then. So
I had my Double Dragon set up as an NBA Jam for a while. I still have the board.
Sweet.
Yeah, I put a marquee on it, and blank black marquee, just like an operator, or not blank bezel, black bezel like an operator.
Oh, yeah.
Just NBA Jam marquee and some kind of blank CP that it came with, and there you go. Let's play some NBA Jam. I'm Clyde Drexler and the bald guy.
Terry Porter.
Yep. Be Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, or Bill Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas.
Who's going to do the next one? My voice is going out.
Sports balls. Yeah. The Bucks. He had Spud Webb and somebody else. No, he wasn't a Buck. He was a Spud Webb's in that game, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the Hawks maybe?
Was he a Hawk?
I don't know.
Dominique Wilkins would be the Hawk.
I'll read this email. I never read emails.
Good.
Go for it.
I want to hear you read it.
All right. We have another email from Lyle B. Hey, Rejects. Love the podcast. It reminds me of birthday parties at Todd Tucky's place, long afternoons refusing to leave Spaceport or even Chuck E. Cheese, and the one magical time I had an arcade machine or two in my childhood basement, lost to financial ruin and divorce, probably to TNT Amusements. Here in Brooklyn, there's a near total vacuum for real arcade machines. I nearly died when I went to a retro arcade two summers ago to find mostly 90s beat-em-ups. Give me vectors! I'll even take a laser disc. Where's Robotron? I think the last great time I had playing 80s games was at Disney Quest. R.I.P. FPGA and the Mister has been a hot topic these days. Have any of you tried it? I don't really care about console emulation, and I use a Pi 4 setup to play the arcade classics. Is it worth it to make the switch from MAME? Will I suddenly be transported to another world by the magic of zero lag input? Once you stack all of the junk together to make one of these puppies, you're out like $400, so your expert advice is appreciated if available. When the apocalypse subsides, are there any spots left near NYC worth a field trip? Is there a wealthy and eccentric collector that is looking for new friends to share their home arcade with? Thanks for pointing me to some fantastic games I missed. Zookeeper. And for all your drunken meanderings, keep your contacts clean and swap your caps. Lyle B. Nice.
I like that.
My left cap's bulging. I need to swap it out.
So my first thought on arcades near New York City, and I don't, this isn't really near New York City, but my first thought would be Fun Spot, which is up in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
That is a place I've not gone to yet, and I'd really, really want to go there. That's where the ACAM Arcade Classic, American Classic Arcade Museum, is that right?
Correct.
Yep.
That's where their collection is, so they have a wealth of classic games that you can visit and play. When I was in New York, I went to Barcade. I assume there's still Barcades around. I'm not sure how many 80s classics they still have there, but I do remember playing Robotron and a bunch of other classics when I was in New York several years ago. So that's the only thing I could think of as far as arcades in New York City or around New York City.
I wonder what arcade he's talking about. Are you perhaps talking about Barcade in,
possibly
in Brooklyn? Because
Brooklyn had a Barcade.
It's Barcade.
Yeah, I believe
it's
so,
called
yeah.
Barcade.
Yeah. There's a couple of Barcades around there, isn't there?
Yeah, there are. They have a few locations.
If you're talking about the copyright quotes Barcade.
Right.
Trademarked.
Yeah. Sorry. Whatever. When I went there several years ago, they had Timber. They had some somewhat rare games, but yeah, they're not going to have fucking Vectors or whatever. They're catering to like hipsters and people that like the pop culture stuff, like we just talked about in the last email, right? Like they want the Turtles games and all that stuff. So
yeah, Miss Pac, Galaga.
You're not going to see that stuff at those places because it's like the idea of that time, not necessarily the good shit.
Yeah.
And I don't really know anything else around there. I know if you like pinball, there's Sunshine Laundry. I think that's what it's called. And I was going to say Fun Spot, too. And I think there's a couple other stuff in some neighboring states that's really good. They're really up-and-comers that are... I don't know if they're kind of soft opening for all the COVID shit, but I think there's some new stuff in the area. We'll have to mention it next time I research it. But yeah, when I was at Barcade, I remember Timber... They had a Make Tracks, I guess. They had quite a bit of 80s stuff.
Yeah, I remember playing. That was before I had my Robotron. I was playing Robotron. I was going, man, I really need to get one of these. I was like, Jones and had, Robotron.
Yeah, DK, Galaga, and all that shit. But
it seemed like it had a pretty good mix of...
Just the mainstream classics, not the... Robotron's, to me, is not technically a...
Mainstream.
Even though it's one of my top games of all time in, like, the, you know, the top 100s or whatever, you know. Well, maybe you'll see it, but it's not really considered like one of those AAA titles. Like people, you know, those spots are always reserved for Pac-Man and Galaga and all that shit. But yeah, I agree with you. Where the fuck is Robotron? Where's the Vectors?
Yeah, I agree with both of you. Fun Spot's the place you want to go. Make the trip. I've never been.
Do it. I'd
like to, but that's
the we place all need to go.
Yeah, I really had a chance to go a couple years ago, and I didn't, and I regret it. It sucks. The second part of the email. It's something we've talked about a lot on the podcast. So he's talking about the FPGA and the Mister.
What is a Mister?
It was originally a emulator or a FPGA device for Amiga and Atari ST, and it was called Myst. So Amiga, you know, Amiga of Amiga and ST of Atari ST, and now they added the ER, and now there's essentially cores and. Stuff for consoles and arcades, and it's an open source platform. He currently uses Pi 4 to play the classics. The thing is that unless you're like someone that's really into, you mentioned, I guess, the fact that you know about input lag, then maybe it'd be beneficial to you, but a lot of that stuff doesn't really matter unless you're really going after high scores. If you're just a casual player, input lag's not really a big deal. I mean, it's not.
My thing is none of it's on the CRT monitor, is it? Unless you can get it on a CRT arcade monitor, I don't give a shit about any of it. It all sucks.
You can with these, but you need, I think, a separate add-on and probably a... I think it does 15 kilohertz, but you might need a couple of converters. I don't know. But for $400 to go from that, from a Pi setup, to me, it's not worth it. I wouldn't. I'd rather just have everything from MAME. I think a lot of the FPGA stuff is glorified for the casual player. It's not, to me, it's not worth $400.
I agree with you completely. I think I have not played with one, but I am aware of the Mr. FPGA. I don't think it's $400 better than your Raspberry Pi. I think it could be marginally better, but you're well into diminishing returns on that. I think the platform itself is cool, and I'm glad it's out there. I think it's really neat, but I don't think it's that good. It's all fake bullshit, you know? I want the real thing, and if it's not going to be the real thing, I'll just take the cheapest thing that can reasonably do it, and so that's MAME on my laptop.
Yeah. That's the name of the episode. I was actually reading about the Mr. stuff today because I was like, what the fuck is Mr.? Apparently it's been around for quite a while, right? Because the original platform was, you know, Amiga and Atari ST, so it's been on Atari Age and all that stuff for a couple of years, probably longer. But when I was reading about it, I found an awesome thread on UKVAC, which is one of my favorite arcade forums that I always forget about. But a lot of technical knowledge on that forum. I love this post by Retroman839, and he says, like the roast beef in the Matrix, most won't know they are eating a synthetic replicant. And it's, I don't know, it's funny because, yeah, you know, if you're already invested in the Pi shit, you're really not going to notice the difference. And the thing with Mr. is that it's open source. So I was looking at another thread on Clav where someone mentioned it in the BitKit thread. And, you know, the BitKit's an FPGA platform as well, except for it's kind of more, it's closed, right? And yeah. It, that allows the person that makes it a lot more attention to detail and a lot more care around the games that are released. So since Mr.'s open source, well, I don't know, I've never even played BitKit, but what I'm saying is that the open source nature of it, from what I gather, is that you're limited by the person that's authoring those cores for those game engines, essentially. And I was reading that, you know, the classics that a lot of these multi-games have, or not multi-games, but FPGAs have struggled with in the past is like the analog circuitry, right? Sounds and all that. Yeah. I watched a YouTube video of Robotron for Mr. and it's fucking horrible. The sound pitch is off. Same with Donkey Kong. Obviously the graphics and the frame rates are all 100% intact. But you're never going to get, you know, if you compare that against J-Rock's multi-game, right? He put extreme attention to detail, and obviously you can only copy the logic stuff so much in FPGA, but there's a lot of timing, right? And I think that's where a lot of these cores, the translation can be lost a little bit. I think depending on who's making these, some of those subtle nuances of these classics can be lost. Probably will only be able to notice it, but
yeah, having the sounds be off is really jarring with those games. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to get the ZooQ again, the J-Rock Taito multi, because I wanted to play Zookeeper like it's intended and not have weird sounds when you complete a level or any of that kind of stuff. But for the most part, like, I still have the RPicade Pi set up in my JAMA machine, and for what I need it for, just, you know, to play multiple games that I don't have in my arcade, you know, it's perfectly fine. But I think I only paid a couple hundred dollars for that, as opposed to what he's talking about, like putting $400 or some more dollars into a setup. So
yeah, well, it's not just $400. It's like you got to do a shitload of work too, because you pay that for the hardware, you got to flash the stuff and track down the stuff to flash, and it's like it's a bunch of bullshit.
And there's not really any interface. I don't think. You have to buy an interface too, right? If you're going to do it in an actual cab. So
I don't know about that. But in any case, it's not like a plug and play. So there's two sides to this coin, and I won't go too far down the free software rabbit hole. But I agree that if there's one dude out there who thinks, oh, I'm going to make this thing for the Mister and it kind of sucks, then that's not the same thing as someone who is doing it to make money. And in order for it to survive in the market, it has to have a certain level of quality. The flip side of that is that if you see the shitty thing that someone did in a weekend because they wanted to, and it's open source, you can fix it, right? Like, if we were playing Birdie on the ZooQ and we were like, oh, the fucking button doesn't work, we'd be screwed.
What
but button? instead we played it on MAME, and I was like, oh, okay, well, I can just go fix it, and I did. And so, like, it's a trade-off.
Yeah, but who's going to fucking... For the end user, though, me. The casual... Yeah. You're the small exception. Like, for the end user that's enjoying their Pi 4 setup or whatever, they're not going to fucking invest that time, so they're stuck with the skilled people that can do that, and that's where there's that trade-off. Like, you know, if you want a super really, really close version of all the Williams shit, just buy a J-Rock. If you want all the Laserdisc shit, probably just buy a Dexter. The list is slowly growing with kind of like these discrete releases of stuff, right? Like the Cinematronics one and all that. But I like this discussion, though. It's fun. Even though we've talked about it a lot. What was your... I guess you already said your opinion about you disagreeing on the closed platform versus open, so...
Yeah, I said it.
Yeah. Jordan, what do you think about your MAME setup versus, say, the BitKit stuff? Like,
I would say, like Ian said, if you have something that's MAME-based, that's probably going to be more flexible. You know, you can add and subtract games, and if people have ROM patches and things like that and improve the emulation, then you get to take advantage of that. Whenever, you know, we have these shitty MAMEs of the episodes because we can't get together in an arcade, I'm always hoping that I can play it on one of my machines, and one of those being, you know, a MAME machine. And mine just so happens to be based off like a fucking Xbox. I just have this weird board that is this interface, this JAMA interface. So to me, you really have to get the thing in an arcade cabinet on a CRT. And however you do that, then it's going to make things a lot better with proper controls and a proper monitor. I mean, I don't get to play the game on it, but, you know, I have to play it so we can Skype video, blah, blah, blah. And I absolutely hate playing these games on my laptop with a stupid little controller in my hand.
You used to go get an HDMI to VGA adapter and hook it up to a computer monitor.
Yeah, but I mean, why? I already have stuff to play these games on. So, yeah, I just do that for the episode, and I basically hate it the whole time. Anyway, I like some of the FPGA stuff that has come out, but they're, you know, JAMA boards that just plug into something. I mean, I like the J-Rock. I like the BitKit. Those are great. As far as if you're not playing them in a cabinet, I'm not the one to talk to because I don't like any of that shit.
Yeah. I was reading like, oh, yeah, now, you know, the emulation on the SNES and Genesis and all that stuff's way better now. And because for a while, you know, that stuff's relied on emulators for...
Go buy a SNES. There's fucking the Goodwill.
Well, some of those games are like into the $100 range, though, if you like are serious about it.
Card.
Can't you get the card?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the point is, like, do you want to spend $400 or do you just want to go buy a flash card? Then you're playing on real hardware. Your input lag is limited to your monitor at that point at home, right? If you're playing on your LCD, you're going to have input lag. Actually, anyways, get a CRT monitor. You're like an old TV.
The games like, don't
why would,
LCD. I mean, why bother?
Why would you? That's the thing, though. It's like, you know, how far do you want to go with all that? It's like you're spending money just to spend money at that point in some cases. And if you like to tinker with the shit, it's pretty cool. But I agree with Ian. Like, it's awesome that it's out there. And it's just one more thing to preserve stuff. I don't necessarily know if we need to preserve consoles because there's like millions upon millions of consoles and carts out there. But one of the threads I read was like, oh, this guy's selling all of his CPS1 carts now because there's a CPS1 core out there for Mister. And I'm like, that's funny to me because it's like, do you really need a FPGA for that? Like, I don't know. A lot of the CPS1 stuff's beat 'em ups, which input lag stuff, who cares about that? Like, I don't know. Some of the stuff that's coming out lately, like, that's giving people an excuse to sell like their physical media and shit. That's the fun of it to me. That's, I guess, one of the reasons why I've always liked our old smelly box arcade cabinets.
Yeah, no, it's preserving the original hardware. I mean, this other stuff, you know, I like some things because it gives me an opportunity to play games that I don't otherwise have. And I just, you know, it's good. But it's got to be a close experience for me.
Here's one other thing I'm going to add on this topic, which is MAME is open source and has been around for 2 decades. Like, it stood the test of time, and multiple commercial products that may have been more polished when they released are dead in that same time frame. I'm talking about, like, the Arcade SD, which hasn't had updates in years and is pretty much superseded, and I don't know anyone who would consider buying one at this point. And the thing it replaced as well, the clay multi whatever.
Arcade Shop board.
Yeah, the Arcade Shop board. Like, both of those were completely closed source, and while they were good, they got superseded and are now dead. So
the Hanahoe board's gone dead. You know, but there's a whole bunch of that kind of stuff.
But they cashed stuff. But they cashed in good at the time, though.
Sure, no, and I mean, so did Atari when they were cranking out fucking 50,000 Asteroids. My point is that having an open source like that and be a community project means that it'll be preserved, and I would feel a lot better about running something if I knew it was going to be supported in the future.
Yeah, well, when you said, oh, we're going to play Hard Hat, first thing I did is I look on my main machine. Oh, do I have Hard Hat on there? And yeah, I did. I had played it before, and I had it. It was all set up. I played some Hard Hat.
Fucking getting ahead of yourself. We haven't announced.
What's Hard Hat? Anyhow, sorry.
What's Hard Hat?
What is Hard Hat, anyhow?
Speaking of Hard Hats.
Yeah.
Grant, what was the game of the episode that you got to pick?
Yeah, so last episode we played Domino Man.
The Domino Man.
And
you dominated.
I dominated all your fucking asses.
Domino Man.
And I was looking for games. We delayed the podcast a couple weeks, and I waited to the last minute, like always, to find a game. And I actually went through, like, A through Z of all the titles released, and I was like, I saw a lot of stuff that I wanted to play but didn't really want to play for this episode. So now I have backup choices. I don't know. I think I've always wanted to play this game because it's fun, but it's Exidy's Hard Hat. It is not common. It's not popular. It's a lot, we've actually played a lot of Exidy titles on this podcast. I don't know why. Why is that?
Because I'm a big fan of Exidy. I like Exidy games.
Yeah, and they just, Exidy games have this charm to them where, you know, they're not really that polished, but there's something that kind of sucks you into them. And I discovered this game a long time ago, and I don't know. It's kind of funny. Yeah, we've played Venture. We've played Pepper 2. And yeah, I just, when I was scrolling through the games, like, oh yeah, Hard Hat. I forgot about that game. Let's just play that game.
There was some reason that I played this in the last few months, and I can't remember if it's because we mentioned it when we were doing Pepper 2, or if maybe Crazy Climber 80 mentioned it with Pepper 2 review. But for some reason, I heard of it, and I was like, I don't know that game, and I looked it up, and I played it.
I'm pretty sure I mentioned it in the Pepper 2 episode.
Yeah, it must have been, because it was one that was brought up, and I had never heard of it, and so I had to go check it out. And so,
and probably no one else has heard of it, but that's kind of the, you know, now that we're doing MAME of the episode, I'm trying to pick games, or we're all trying to pick games that we probably won't play in the in real life, in the physical, actual, released arcade fashion. None of us own it. I don't know of anyone that owns it. So we're trying to pick those titles. Otherwise, you know, we'd pick all the AAA shit, but we're trying to save that stuff.
Well,
so I'm trying to pick.
Even when we were playing on the cabinets, I feel like we have not done a lot of AAA. And my personal taste definitely trends towards games that are rare because they suck.
Yeah. That's your taste.
Like, I can say, I do not believe we have. Did we do Pac-Man? I don't think we've ever done Pac-Man or Donkey Kong. Centipede might be
we've done Donkey Kong.
Most mainstream game we've done.
We did Donkey Kong.
Did we do Donkey Kong? Oh yeah, we did.
We did on your mini.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I agree with that too. But then we don't want to play too shitty of a game. So
it bums us out when we play a shitty game.
Yeah. And so this game, you know, I love the vibe of this game. It's a I guess it's considered a puzzle game. I don't know why it's considered a educational puzzle game. I haven't got that portion of it yet, but
because you have to spell.
Oh fuck!
You got to spell the word that's already spelled out for you. That's
education. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not education.
You got to move the shapes into the into the dotted shapes.
So apparently, this was touted as the first educational coin-op game. You play a busy carpenter that is constantly being chased by hammers and whirlwinds throughout a grid of scaffolding while manipulating letters to spell Exidy or Hard Hat. It's a four-way joystick game, no buttons, and it is identical in hardware to Pepper 2.
This is very, very similar hardware to a lot of other Exidy games at the time. Venture, Mousetrap, Hard Hat, Pepper 2, all very, very similar hardware. And they're based on the earlier batch of FAX, Targ, Spectar hardware. And I think even all that was based on some earlier black and white stuff. You can definitely tell this hardware had its roots in the black and white era and was getting pretty long in the tooth by the time this game came out in 1982.
Yeah, and that's again kind of like that charm of the Exidy games. It's pushing that hardware. It's like at the same time,
I think
it's still kind of engaging.
The thing I really appreciate about this era of Exidy games is, like, because technically they kind of suck, by which I mean like the graphics are terrible. A lot of them are hyper focused on tight gameplay. And once you see through the shitty graphics and really get a hold of the gameplay, I think many of these are really fine games, really excellent concepts, and they just work exceptionally well, which is why I love them.
Yeah. The cool concept of this game that I like, that's really unique. I was looking through this long list of games this week, and I'm like, God, it's just Pac-Man clone after Pac-Man clone. Is there games that are not, you know, Pac-Man clones that are engaging, and this one's not a Pac-Man clone. It's unique. It's cool that the best, I guess the cool component in this game is the is when you knock out all the posts, they call them, the screen shifts depending on what side of the screen you're on. So if you're on the bottom of the screen and you knock out the posts, the screen will shift down, top will shift up, left will shift left, and right will shift right. But that's kind of the really cool, unique component of the game that just adds that extra nice touch, I think. It's kind of hard to explain it, but
I will do my patented gameplay explanation.
Yeah, do that.
Hard Hat is a puzzle game where you have to spell out a word that is outlined in the middle of the screen. The it's a maze game as well, I guess maze slash puzzle. You start with a grid, both horizontal and vertical, with little spots in between that they join to, and walls on all four sides. And then there are also some thicker barriers. Any of the small pieces, they call it scaffolding in the flyer, leaning into that construction theme. If you walk over them, you score 50 points and it disappears. You cannot pass through the thicker barriers. If you remove all of the supports, all the scaffolding on one side, either top, left, right, or bottom of the screen, then the whole screen scrolls up. So you can, as you scroll the screen up, the letters appear, and you have to either push them into place in the center of the maze, or you can scroll the whole maze so that they slide into place as the entire screen scrolls. Preventing you from doing this are a batch of hammers banging around and a tornado. The hammers move pretty randomly, don't really chase you, but if you touch them, you die. You also die if you touch the whirlwind, the tornado, rather. And the tornado has two helpful, well, semi-helpful effects. The first is that if it touches a letter that hasn't been pushed into its final position in the outline, it'll reappear at a random spot in the maze. And the second is that if you touch it, you die. The second is that if it goes through a barrier, it destroys the barrier. So that can open up the maze a little bit, and if a letter is stuck in an inaccessible place, it can get it out of the way or into a better place. I feel like I'm forgetting something.
Does the tornado follow you at all? I wasn't clear on that. Or is it also random like the hammers?
It kind of starts to, I think. Because
it comes your direction.
Yeah, I think it's a general following. That's the thing with the AI in this game. It's the smart dumb, or the dumb smart, I guess. It's doing its own paths. So it's kind of following you, but then it's also doing its scripted circles at the same time. And so you can really fake it out and direct it, kind of like the Pac-Man ghost, but on a much smaller, or a slower speed, it seems.
Slower. It's
way slower, yeah.
It's frustrating. It's like, fuck, I gotta wait so long to get these assholes to the other side of the screen, and then I can go back over there. You just get, like, kind of bored. I don't know.
I'm remembering the thing I forgot, which is that if you push a letter into one of the hammers, it will kill it.
Yes. It's
pretty nice.
Basically your own offensive move of the game.
Yeah.
Other than I would describe pushing the
AI in this as more annoying than antagonistic. They're not really trying to chase you down. They're just in your way, trying, like, keeping you from completing the level.
Yeah, so you can't necessarily group them like you can in a lot of the games. You kind of can, but it seems like when you do have them grouped, then the piece is in the wrong spot and you can't smash them, so it's kind of frustrating. It's like, oh shit, they're grouped, but then, yeah, that part's kind of annoying. But yeah, the this is one of those games that's kind of disorienting. Like, you're dropped in to all this shit moving, you don't know where the letters are at, because for all the levels that I played, I believe that you said it was random, right? So the orientation of the posts, scaffolds are all random.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll see letters on the screen, sometimes you won't. And once you do see a letter, if it's on an edge, this is one of those games where you just don't really know what to do. Like, you really need to manipulate the screen. I think that's a cool mechanic. Not only do you have the freedom of moving the letters, but you can manipulate the whole screen, which is kind of an extra layer of strategy, which is really cool. It does make you think. It's actually a really good puzzle game for that component.
There are several gameplay aspects of this that I really, really like. Definitely the way you can move the whole screen in order to get a letter in position is really handy, especially when it's stuck in some place, like between two barriers and you can't push it out. Real handy, and it's very satisfying to, like, line up two or three letters and just drop them all into place, almost Tetris-like in that way. I also really appreciate that the difficulty curve is completely natural on this game, by which I mean, in a lot of games, the difficulty is purely based on the gameplay speeding up and you having to have quicker reactions in order to cope with the increased speed. And this is not really a game in that vein. This game is more like you're backing yourself into these corners.
Yeah.
So as you move these letters around, you can't go through them. And once they're in place, they can't be moved. And the word is in the middle of the screen. So as you're completing the level, you're also making it harder to finish the level because your mobility is limited, because there's this huge thing right in the middle of the screen that you can't go through. You have to go around. And on the first level, the word is exity, which is five letters. And on the second one, it's hard hat, which is a lot more. And so the second level is more difficult, just purely based on the size of that barrier increasing. And again, it's like at the beginning of the level, it's wide open. And then the further you get down the level, the difficulty increases. And I think that's a really natural and elegant mechanic for controlling the difficulty of the board. That's something that I enjoy seeing in games when I do see it.
Yeah, it's only as hard as you make it, and it's hard to make it easy sometimes, right? You can make it hard for yourself really quick in this game, and you're right, there's no sense of urgency. You can seemingly take your time, but it seems like the more time you take, the more lost you get, and you kind of lose your focus. So
you get more too.
Yeah. And so, did you say get more points?
No, there's more hammers. If you sit around, more hammers will appear.
Is there? Okay. I counted five, I think, at most, but I could be wrong.
There's not five at the beginning. You know, there's just like two or three in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So more
that time. Phrase you used, no sense of urgency, really sums up this game for me. And it's conspicuous in its absence. And I think a big part of that is that when you're in the level, there's no background sound. This game reminds me a lot of Pepper 2 being based on the same hardware and also lifting a lot of sounds. And like the screen scrolling mechanic is very similar to Pepper 2, you know, maze games, et cetera, et cetera. But if you think about Pepper 2, there's that, you know, bump, 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 bump in the background that's kind of changing pitch and speeding up, and it's driving the game forward. And this has nothing. And it's weird.
It's a safe construction site.
Here's the other thing I really like about this game, which is that the maze changes. So it's random at first, but as you scroll it around, the parts that are revealed are randomly generated. So you end up, again, like making things easier or harder based on what you're doing in the game.
Yeah, it can totally get better as you scroll it, which is nice to see.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing about a lot of these games versus the fixed mazes, where it's the same goal, but at least there's some variety. Sometimes you don't even know I didn't realize there was variety, actually, but that's the cool thing. And this is one of those games where the first level can be hard depending on what they throw at you. I played it like 5 or 6 times for the first time in months before the episode started, and I failed so many times in the first level, and then I think I passed it twice. And so I love that randomness. I think Exidy does like a really, really good job with a lot of their puzzle strategy games. And if they were like an Atari or a Midway at the time, these games probably would have, I think, kicked ass with like the marketing and all that. But that's again why we play these classic gems that a lot of people don't know about, though.
I don't know. I think by that time, people were looking for action. You know, I think they were... They'd already... Anything with a maze. I just remember being a kid, and anything with a maze looked like Pac-Man 2 years too late. I mean, I like this game, but I didn't play it back then. If I would have seen it, I probably would have thought it looked like a piece of shit.
I think that's a good segue into discussion about the cabinet and art package, if we're ready for that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
was this mostly a conversion kit for other Exidy games?
I believe it is a conversion kit game. It's the standard Venture cabinet.
Yeah, mostly the same, except the monitor is upright instead of laid down.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And, man, the monitor just looks lost in all that bezel.
In all that green.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's kind of cool that it has art on, some art on there. They could have done a little more art on the bezel, I guess.
The CPO, I found a picture of the CPO, and the site art and marquee are pretty good, though. I mean, not pretty good, but they're like, has art on it, so that's good.
Yeah, I think bezel, overall, I like
bezel's
it.
Bezel's kind of phoned in, but...
We were talking about how the letters in the game were made out of nails, but it looks like on the flyer, they're actually made out of pencils. If you look at the logo on the flyer, they're all pencils.
No, those are nails. Those are nails.
No, those are pencils.
Nope, they're nails.
The erasers look pretty flat, man.
Those are nails. They have that.
Are they? All right.
I don't know the goddamn.
They look like pencils to me because of the tips.
I'm pretty sure.
Points too, dog.
True.
Otherwise, they wouldn't go into the wood.
Fall. Yeah.
All right. I stand corrected. They're not pencils.
Yeah. I don't know. As far as Exidy games are concerned, I guess the earlier ones, the art's pretty Exidy.
I mean, earlier games were better. They had better art early on. They got shitty later. And this is shitty. This is bad art.
Well, I don't like this art package.
Yeah,
even
it's not good.
I think Pepper 2 has a way better art package than this.
Now, the best part of this art package is the title with the nails.
Oh,
yeah.
You're going to say the lady on the flyer.
Oh, my God. That flyer. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll post this in on the website, but
sure, no.
there's a flyer, basically a conversion flyer that came out from Exidy that says new games for your old and tired machines. And so they were selling Pepper 2, Venture, and Hard Hat.
We could put an old tired lady on the flyer.
I like that. Yeah. They have Venture listed twice because they only have three games, really.
Yeah. How do we make this balance out? Venture twice.
Yeah, it's like a lady wizard with like a star and moon skirt and hat. But I describe this, it's like really poorly illustrated. The proportions are weird and the legs are all kind of fucked up. And the face, I described it as like those pictures where it looks like a young woman and an old woman, depending on how you look at it, except it looks like an old woman both ways.
Yeah.
I do like on the art that we actually get to see the guy. Because on the actual game, it's just a helmet with legs, basically. On the art package, you actually get to see it's a little dude with an orange. And on the art package, he has an orange helmet on as opposed to like the yellow helmet of the game.
Yellow helmet, yellow legs, yellow. He's just one.
He's just one big old yellow Pac-Man.
That's classic Exidy stuff with that era, right? Solid colored. And That's the funny thing, though. The hammers are two colors, which is interesting. But I like the character design, actually. I think it's pretty cool how it's just like the they could have just done like a stupid construction sign typical silhouette, but it's cool how it's just like, you know, you could see the eyes through the helmet. The running animation, even though it's kind of crude, is actually funny and a little decent. And the hammer animation's kind of cool. And I don't know. I guess they did good with what they had, but you can't say much for it.
It's just typical Exidy background.
I don't really compare it with the time frame shit anymore, though, because it's just Exidy stuff. You know,
they're favorite underdog of ours. I mean, their games never looked that great.
Yeah, but that's the thing with these games is Pepper 2 is fucking awesome, and there's all these redeeming qualities with a lot of these early Exidy games.
Yeah, and then when they went to the shooting stuff, then they got the fancy colors and the bigger sprites and things like that. Kind of went all out then.
So, did you have any specific strategies you guys used to play?
It's basically two ways to get your shit done. You either push the letter into place with your character, or you move the screen. It almost reminds me of one of those puzzles that is blocks where it's missing the hole.
God, I was gonna say that. You stole my fucking line.
You move shit around to make it like drop 15, into place, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
You need to edit out that so I can say it.
So those are your two basic things, and then the hammers are annoyances, and you know, the whirlwind might help you out. A lot of it is just kind of waiting, and it's a puzzler. And I like puzzle games. So I don't know, what was the question?
Not that. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought of that immediately, Jordan, like those little puzzle games they used to have, like, was it like 8 or 9 pieces and there's missing one and you had to slice it around just to get the correct order, and it looks super simple, but it's just like a nightmare to move the pieces around. And I 100% got that vibe when I first played this game.
That's a lot of strategizing, a lot of setup for the final, you know, things to fall into place. What do you guys think? Do you think this game would have ever done good in any arcade?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think I would have played it back in the day. Maybe played it once and been like, what the fuck is this?
I
wouldn't have revisited it.
So I'm aware of this game just because it's Exidy, but I had never played it in my life until yesterday when Brandon chose it. And so I just, you know, bombed straight in without paying attention to anything. And it was like, all right, it's Pac-Man, but you have to remove all the supports instead of eating dots. And then I like removed a bunch and the whole screen moved. And I was like, what the fuck? And then like letters started appearing. And I was like, what are these? Are these like, do I run over this? And then it appears in the center like Mr. Do kind of thing. Or, you know, Bubble Bobble works that way. It took me a little bit to get the hang of it. And then I was like, okay, I got it.
Yeah, you start peeling back the layers of all the stuff you have to do, and it's like, oh, this is cool. This is cool. This sucks. This is fun. My strategy, which wasn't that great, but I got lost in this game so many times where like the letters would appear on the edge. They always appear on the edge, right? Mm-hmm. For the first time they drop down, they're always against an edge, which is the worst possible position. You literally can't do anything with any letter along the edge unless it's actually lined up with the letters below it, right? Then you can just drop it down. But that doesn't necessarily seem to happen that often. And when it does, there's other barriers in your way and hammers and shit. And so what I would do is I would always try to at least knock it down 2 spaces. Once it's down 2 spaces, you can pretty much move it wherever you want for the most part. And that was kind of my strategy. It took me a while, even though it's very basic, to figure out, oh yeah, left side it moves left, right side it moves right. But even that, sometime with the hammers going around and the tornado, it's like sometimes you still forget about those basic mechanics. So I like how it's super stupid simple, but can still be challenging based on what strategy you used. And I was watching Brian and Jordan play and through their levels, and I was like, oh, you could have just moved that up and probably got that.
Oh, yeah.
Or done this. But it's always interesting to watch the other people play and what they see and what they don't see, right? and what their sense of urgency is, I guess, and their strategy. And that is the kind of fun part of watching other people play, though, I think, to see what they notice and what they don't.
Yeah, it's like, interesting this game doesn't have a timer or any kind of like urgency to move on to the next level. You can just sit there and play it forever and not really get penalized, except for probably more enemies coming on the screen, possibly.
Yeah, and the strategy of lining them up and then just dropping the screen down to let them go in, that almost seems like the better strategy than trying to move them all around the board, to be honest, because you're only focused on getting them left or right, and then all you have to do is knock the supports down, up or down. But it also seems easier than it is, too. So,
yeah,
well, you still end up with stuff where like it comes down and it's right up against a barrier, and so you can't move it into the right position. You have to scroll the screen right or left, and then if you have another one set up already, then you're like blowing that setup. So it's definitely not as easy. I agree with you on like two or more segments at a time. The mechanics of this are a little bit weird because the screen only scrolls when you remove the supports along the border. So you can go one level up and remove everything, and that won't collapse. Mm-hmm. But if you then remove the one on the edge, it'll move down two different tiles. So I definitely was trying to set up like two or three at a time at the beginning in order to get some letters on the board to move the game forward. A thing that I have found out the hard way is when that happens, you go through the barriers, and also the hammers scroll with the board. So if you set up like a move of three tiles and there's a hammer above you, you're going to get fucking wrecked quick.
It's true.
Yeah, all of a sudden all the enemies that you've been staying away from are right on top of your ass and you die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing I noticed was when I didn't set that up and I cleared all ones by the edge of the screen and the scrolled more than once, it's like, oh shit, didn't expect that. And maybe then
I've also, go ahead.
The letters, I was just going to say, maybe then the letters are not exactly where you thought they were going to be.
The other issue that I had is like, you'll end up trapped down a long corridor with a hammer at the end of it. Like there's a wall, you know, a couple spaces ahead of you, but then you remove the supports and it comes in towards you. And then you got to like, I had some times when I was playing it where I just got trapped down at the end of a corridor and the hammer was coming there. And you're like, well, I hope you just randomly turn around.
Yeah.
Killing me.
So I also got trapped where I was within the barriers, like in between the barriers and maybe a letter to where I could not move whatsoever. And I just had to sit there and wait for a hammer to come over and kill me because the hammers can go through the barriers and you can't. But I was like in a place in the screen where there's absolutely nothing I could do.
Yeah.
I had to wait for the thing to kill me.
Yeah, one of the things you think would be very easy in this game, but with the haphazardness of the AIs, since you can't necessarily group it, you think it would be easy to push the letters and just knock out all the hammers, but you find like it's not really worth the time to do that, and the payoff's really not that great because you can play the levels for quite a while and not even kill anything. Like, you don't have to do that, right? So it's like you're almost just going out of your way at that point.
Did anyone get to the third board?
I have.
I have not.
I played this probably 35 times over the last 2 days. And I got like so close to completing the second board, but ended up not. And I was just noticing on the flyer that it only mentions two boards. I feel like they calibrated that about right. I think it probably just repeats back to Exidy if you finish.
Yeah, I think so.
Repeats on
There's four plus. There's one that's called Success.
Oh, damn it. I was going to spoil it. I was there last night. I came down. I played this. I saw on my main machine. I'm like, oh, I've actually played this before. I saw my initials in it. And also the right-hand joystick was set up to move. And usually one-player maze games, I always set up the right-hand joystick because that feels better.
That's what she said.
To use your right hand. So anyhow, I noticed, and I still didn't remember how to play it. I was like Ian trying to like figure out, okay, yeah, it says Exidy in the middle of the screen. What's that all about? And, yeah, trying to figure it out. And I was like, okay, I do these ones and the whole screen moves. Which way? Oh, it's in. Yeah, it took me a while. And then I was like, oh, yeah, you have to put these letters into the middle. And after a while, yeah, I got to the third screen, which, as Ian said, or as Brandon said, is success. And so, again, we haven't mentioned the second screen being the hell's the second screen? Hard hat.
Hard hat.
I yep. mentioned it.
We found that you can have letters like the A
and the H.
And the H, you can't put them in both A or H spots. You will have an A and an H, and they will only fit in either the first or second A or H spot. And I cannot figure out for the life of me how or why sometimes they'll fit and sometimes they won't. Sometimes it has to go to the other one. They look exactly the same. So, and then think of the word success. You have a lot of repeating.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So I never made it past success.
Yeah, and I think if I could spell right, that almost takes up the whole width of the screen. So imagine that too. Like, yeah, you're talking about how one with the longer or words.
One side or something.
Yeah, it's like one space on either side.
Yeah, so like Ian was saying, the longer the letters or the word, you're creating that wall as you build it. And so shit gets difficult. So yeah, this might be a game that tops out really quick in an ownership home environment.
I probably played for a half hour last night and got that far. So I'd be curious if I played more, if I could ever get past success.
Well, on the high score table, there's a bunch of different words next to everybody's name, and I think whenever you score, it puts that word next to your name. I was trying to boot it up real quick to see what other words were on the high score table, to see possibly what maybe those other ones were. The other thing we didn't mention was on the boot screen, it has the person that designed the game, Larry W. Hutcherson Sr.
Yeah, which pretty much did almost all the Exidy games.
I see on the high score table it says Hard Hat, Destroyer, Home Wrecker, basically stuff I don't think is going to show up in the puzzle.
Home Wrecker.
Yeah.
The best one.
With a space in the middle. Are we ready to talk scores?
Oh, yes.
All right. So, Jordan is in last place, but we are all really, really close on this game. We were all within a few thousand points of each other. But Jordan in the number four spot with 24,360. I am in number three with 24,650. Brian in spot number two with 26,450. And Brandon bringing it home again, 27,760 points.
Nicely done.
Nailed it. That's my hard hat joke.
Were you waiting 2 days to drop that one?
No, I just thought of it.
Penciled it.
Yeah. pencil me in there.
Let me pencil that in.
Yeah. We didn't really talk about sound, but yeah, a lot of the sounds ripped from Pepper 2 or same hardware or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you boot this thing up, you think you're playing Pepper 2.
Pepper 2 and a little bit of Robotron. Yeah. Fits the bill enough. There's no background music like Ian said, but you don't really the game would probably be way more hectic, wouldn't it, if you had background music. That really does set the stage for levels, which a lot of people take for granted, right? The music does change the atmosphere of the game.
Five constantly banging hammers.
Yeah. Just yeah. Fucking
amazing.
It could have been worse, I guess, is what we'll say. Yeah, what we could say is it could have been worse. Yeah, so let's talk about ratings. I'll be curious to see this one.
Are you starting? Or are you nominating?
I always nominate.
All right.
I'll go second.
Jordan, you should go first.
All right. I like this game, obviously. I played it on my own at some point without somebody saying it had to be the name of the episode, and enough to, you know, enjoy it past a couple levels. It's definitely frustrating. It's something I would not have played in an arcade. And it takes a few games to realize what the hell's going on, but that's kind of the same with a lot of the games that we like to play. That's the reason why they're obscure, and you know, people don't know of these ones. The cabinet is atrocious. I mean, I don't have any need to ever own one of these, I don't think, other than it's weird. And if one did come up for sale, just knowing me, I probably would try to buy it. But I don't think it would ever make it into the arcade because you couldn't convince anybody to play it.
Unless you know a carpenter.
the theme is stupid. To think that it's an educational game. I forgot if we mentioned that or not, but this is, you know, is asinine. You know, you're trying to spell the name, a word that's already spelled out in front of your face. How is that fucking educational?
Problem solving. I bet they put these in fucking elementary schools across the nation.
They did. They're still there. That's why you never see them. They're so fucking good.
Yeah. The shop class.
SAT scores through the roof on those districts.
HAT scores.
Yeah, a bunch of construction workers out of them, I guess.
Yeah, sorry, I filled in the bubble with a strike and a nail through it in my test.
But I gotta give it a thumbs up. I wondered if I was gonna
thumbs up. What is this?
Coins up. Sorry, I wondered if I was gonna coins down this one, honestly, but I like it, and I played it too much to give it a coins down, and I enjoyed myself too much playing it, so it gets a coins up. It's just another one of these weird games that I enjoy. It's not a piece of shit. It's a good game. It makes you think, and it makes you want to play again. So how is that a bad game?
Yeah, I think coins up as well. Not because I picked it. No, actually, yeah, because I picked it. I was trying to pick a game that I knew. Trying to pick games that don't suck, but are also engaging. And I agree with Jordan. I probably wouldn't ever buy this game. But it does have that just one more game feel, which is really awesome. And that's kind of like what I look for in classic games that I like. You feel like you can do better over and over again. And then on top of it, it's not really pattern-based, which is cool. It's random, which is also cool. And so could have a little small amount of legs in a collection. But yeah, I don't think I would personally buy one. You know, if you're someone like Ian that has a lot of Exidy boards, you could probably swap some ROMs into do you think it's the same hardware as Venture too, or
it's the same soundboard as Pepper 2. There's a daughter board that does all the sound stuff, and that's different between Pepper 2 and Venture, so
no. Yeah, I'm surprised they've never done a multi-Exidy that's not the Exidy collection, because all these games could be played in that same cabinet. And
yeah,
I think if you had at least one of those Exidy games, I would try to make some custom rigged switching thing, I guess. Coins up for me, though. I think it's a fun game that's obscure. I haven't had a lot of time on it, but I have played it before in the past, kind of like Jordan, just kind of by searching through games. And I've always liked it just for the fact that it's a fun game, that just one more time, one more play feeling. To me, it's coins up. Brian.
So I may be the odd man out on this one, but I'm giving this one a coins down. I think it has some things going for it, some things not going for it. It's definitely not one that I think that I would rush to play multiple times after. It can be pretty frustrating, and so after a few goes, I'm like, all right, that's enough of that. And plus, all the sounds being from Pepper 2 is just reminded me of a much better game when I'm playing it. I'm like, man, I really... maybe rather play Pepper 2 than play this game. You know, the some of the graphics are reminiscent of Pepper 2, but some of them, like the hard hat guy, is just kind of goofy. I don't know. It's not a terrible game, but overall, I think that I don't 100% enjoy playing it, and not sure that I would come back to it very often. So I think I'd give it a coins down.
Do you say that when you play all the Williams games that have the same exact sounds?
No, because I love those sounds.
But the Pepper 2 sounds are so good.
Exactly.
So as I mentioned, I think there's a lot to like about this game. I think the gameplay has some really unique features, and it's well designed in concept. But it's also really frustrating because both lack of the sense of urgency and how random it is makes it feel almost like a luck-based game. Like, I was playing this game, and I was just getting really annoyed by it. And I was like, this is like being annoyed at a roulette wheel, right? Because it's just, like, what can you fucking do? Hammers decide to corner you and you're like, okay, whatever. What could I have done differently to avoid this? And the answer is like nothing. So even though I am a big fan of Exidy games, I have to agree with Brian and give it a coins down. And I had the same thought. The thing you said, you're like, the fact that all the sounds are from Pepper 2 just makes me think I could be playing Pepper 2. And I had that exact same experience with that and the graphics being very similar, like the screen scrolls and it makes that do-do-do-do-do noise. And like the color palette, and you finish the level and it does the palette cycling deal. I was like, this is really, really close to Pepper 2, but it is not as good. Like, I don't think Brandon or Jordan would disagree that Pepper 2 is a superior game to this.
That is true.
Yeah, but I don't base my ratings on if another game is better than another one, because then...
I agree. and the thing is not that an arbitrary game is better than a different arbitrary game. It's that it is so similar and worse that really does it for me. So, I am unfortunately coins down. I would also buy a cabinet though.
I don't think it's similar at all. Besides like the sounds, obviously, and like the general feel, but then I don't know, if you squint your eyes, it kind of looks like Targ or something, or, you know, like those grid based games. Right. And
I agree. It does. It also has some similarity to Targ.
Yeah. So it's like, that's not enough for me to, you know, it's just like saying, oh, Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man and all the other Pac-Man clones all look like Pac-Man. And I don't know. It's just, I just enjoyed playing it. It's not an amazing game, but it, yeah.
I agree with you as well that it has that, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to play one more game. Because like I said, I probably played 35 fucking games of this. Like, I played it a lot. So even though I hadn't played it before, I want to make sure people understand that this is a considered opinion. It's not like I played for 5 seconds was like, oh, fuck this. And actually, I will say that even though I'm coins down on it, my opinion of the game improved with repeated gameplay. After the first game, I was like, I'm coins down on this shit. And then as I played more games, I was like, oh, I could go either way. But ultimately, I feel like the flaws outweigh the good stuff. One other thing I got to call out that I don't think we mentioned is that the controls kind of suck. I ran into multiple cases where, like, I was up against a barrier and I pushed one direction. Like, I pushed up when I was by the barrier and it went to the side instead. And I cannot abide that. Like, that is just really shitty controls. I also saw, I think, in a couple of the games, like, you can go partway through, like, the little circles that the scaffolding connect to, like, underneath one of the letters after you get it in place. You can, like, kind of walk up there, and then you're kind of stuck, and it's hard to get out of there. I just feel like the controls are not dialed in, and thinking of the Exidy games that I really like Spectar and Pepper 2, those controls are super dialed in. The game just is an extension of your mind, because controls are so responsive. And this
Spectar,
game was just like
an extension of your mind.
I really like Spectar. But I felt like I was fighting the controls to do what I want, and it was just too frustrating for me to give coins up. So I am regrettably a coins down.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about controls, but they are kind of flaky. But they're wonky, but they weren't really enough to really do much damage. You know, it's kind of like barely cutting it, but not enough to destroy the game, I think. But
at first I thought that you had, when you were going a direction, you were just going, and I didn't realize if I lit up on the joystick, I would stop. Like, at first I was like trying to, like, you know, navigate between hammers on either side of me, and I was kind of going back and forth with the joystick instead of just stopping and waiting.
Oh, that would have been bad.
So once I figured that was not the case, that made the controls a little bit better. But yeah, still, the controls are a little heavy-handed, and sometimes you may turn or go in a direction you're not quite expecting.
Yeah, it's good to get all the perspectives of the game, but I thought it was a good one to play. Something.
Oh yeah, definitely
obscure. I'm gonna try to pick something a little bit newer next time, but Got some runner-ups from when I was surfing through stuff. So,
yeah, I'm not mad about playing it. It's not like it's some Mahjong game or fucking 8-liner or whatever.
It's not Monster Bash.
I would... What was the one we played again? Oh, yeah, Monster Bash. Yeah, Monster Bash.
I would take this over Monster Bash.
Definitely.
Any day.
Would you know? You don't like Chameleon Man? Come on, man.
Fuck, you have to play the ROM hack without
Even though the cabinet has no wood grain on it.
Chameleon Man's like the Lion Man of arcade... Alright, well, that's Exidy's hard hat. And I hope you guys enjoy the fun YouTube gameplay.
One thing that our video we mentioned is that this is one of the ROMs that has been released into the public domain by Kaufman, who owned Exidy, founded Exidy. I think this was in our notes, but I didn't read them closely.
That was my Brandon's fun fucking fact.
Okay, yeah, what's your fun fact, Brandon?
From NameDev, yeah, H.R. Kaufman, founder of Exidy and later president of the holding company. I guess it would still be called Exidy Inc.
Exidy spelled different.
Exidy without the E. The original ROM images for Hard Hat have been made available for free, non-commercial use.
So expect them on the Arcade 1-Up Exidy edition.
Yeah.
That would be boss as hell. Can you even
Ian
imagine
would totally buy that.
Taking that shit home and being like, what the fuck is this? First educational coin-op game. God damn it.
The first educational 1-Up arcade. but that's cool though, right? You know, a lot of these old companies are trying to fucking cash in, and Exidy guys like, fuck it, here's fucking Hard Hat, bitches.
They buy it then, they're not gonna buy it now.
Yeah, you get a free fucking copy of Hard Hat when you're checking out at Ace Hardware. Here's your fucking CD.
Yeah, fucking Apple keynote event. Bring HR Kaufman. Everyone's getting you too.
Look underneath your tool belt. All right.
So I have an interesting topic that maybe you guys can help me out with. I've been watching some YouTube videos. This guy does classic arcade repairs where he basically just has games that he's repairing. So he has them out on a bench and he has probably a power supply and a monitor set up. And so my question to all you guys, since I think some of you you definitely have more experience working on like a test bench setup. What do you guys think is a good basic setup for testing boards when they're not in a cabinet?
Yeah, this is a really good question. Brandon, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I know Ian has a pretty extensive setup, so I'll let him do it. And then I will fill in any blanks that I think of, too. So we've all had random setups over the years, I think. But I know Ian has a pretty invested one.
Yeah,
for the basic collector, though, let's bring it down to
now. Somebody that doesn't have a Pat 9000.
So yeah, I wasn't going to be like, oh, yeah, you need a Pat 9000.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
I can tell you the problem you run into for our games is that they're all different. And so you kind of you can start off with a JAMA test bench and then have it some kind of adaptability to where you can do the things that makes the older games able to, you know, be running. Basically getting your voltages to the board and getting your video out of the board. And generally, you know, as you get more advanced and you get into actually needing controls and sound. And I guess so over the years, that's basically all I have is just some guts out of a JAMA cabinet. And usually, yeah, I guess that's it. I've had it to where I worked on Exidy 440 boards and that's about it, I think. Maybe I've used it to work on something else at some point, but I can't really think about it. But it's always been on the bench. It's always there. I probably use it more often to work on a monitor and just have a JAMA board there. And that's what I got. I've never like actually hooked controls up to it. Never gone that far. There is a little speaker on the piece of wood.
And are you hooking this up to a switching power supply?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just basically it's a switcher. It's an ISO. It's a line filter, it's a power switch, and it's a speaker. And then that's about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say minimum viable test bench is a Sony PVM, a switching power supply, and some wire and connectors. For a lot of this troubleshooting, like Jordan was saying, you don't really need controls. So you want to get power in and video out, just like you said, sound too. The nice thing about the PVM is that a lot of games only, they don't output amplified sound. They have the amplifier off board, and there's a little amplifier inside of a PVM and a speaker. The 8044Q is a little 8-inch CRT. Takes 15 kilohertz RGB, like you're going to get out of any arcade board. Built-in speaker, built-in audio amp. That and a switching power supply is a pretty reasonable, compact test bench. On the connector side, it's pretty easy to wire both of those things up JAMA. But what I have come around to is not doing that, and instead just terminating it all in like 0.084 amp connectors. And then you can hook in, you know, you can wire up any edge connector to, so it just has power, video, and sound in like 10 or 15 minutes, and just hook that in. And I find that easier to do than terminating it in JAMA and then building a shitload of JAMA to whatever pinout connectors. You're just going from the 084s to whatever the edge connector is. I like that a lot. If you want to step up one level past that and add controls, the easiest thing to do is use a Genesis gamepad. If you get the three-button version, then those are all just discrete switches, exactly like an arcade control panel, in a DB9 termination. So you can get a, you can just get a connector for that and wire it into your edge connector, and that works really great. Put two of them on if you have two player. That's really for basic troubleshooting stuff. You don't need more than that. Things get a little bit dicey if you want to work on older stuff where it needs an AC supply, or if you want to work on vector games that have a couple of things they need. A lot of Atari stuff in the Golden Age ends up needing, like, it'll take plus minus 22 volts DC and then regulate it down to 15 on the board for some stuff. Mostly you can get away with not doing that or running it off of 12 volts since it ends up getting regulated anyways. But there are a couple like per board kind of things you need to be aware of. In particular, games that use DRAM tend to need weird voltages, like Missile Command or anything. Williams using that 6116 RAM can need some voltages that maybe your switcher doesn't supply. But a normal, you know, 15 amp arcade switcher can power the majority of stuff that you're going to be looking at.
Yeah, you can do Williams stuff no problem with the switchers because it's just plus 12. You don't have any issues with that. The most I've done is similar to Jordan is I have a lot of test shit, you know, like a scope and bug trap and all that crap to test all the chips. But I don't, for like a dedicated setup, I've always just used like the 56 pin connector, throw it on. Even with Asteroids, I've done that, right? Not even hooking it up to any video, just run the signature analyzer on it with no video and just have the voltages hooked up. You can take some shortcuts there, but yeah, I agreed. Just set up with a JAMA harness, get the basic, you know, shitty 15 amp switcher. I like the idea of the Genesis controllers, although I'm lazy like Jordan and I'll just ground out like the pad on the the harness if I need to. Because usually it's not a matter of controls, it's just like the game's like not booting or whatever, so I don't need controls, so who cares about that? But
coin up in one player start.
Exactly, yeah.
And if it have a couple wires hanging off the harness.
Usually if you're on the bench, it's like you're not even to the game playing stage.
Yeah.
And so I don't really worry about that. But it would be nice to have a setup like that. I think that's the perfect solution. There's a JAMA setup, and I never use a line filter, which is bad, I guess, but I just fucking plug my switcher into the wall and unplug it when I need to.
Same. Yeah, if you want to safety it up, you can put a fuse in there, but yeah. Like if your board is destroying your power supply, that's okay. It's the other way around that you want to avoid.
Yeah. And I also agree with the, a lot of the old school guys have like Well, you have the PAT 9000, right? So you have like actual arcade monitors as your test rig, but the PVMs are a really good solution, or anything that accepts that signal.
Yeah, I like those 8-inch PVMs a lot. And unfortunately, all that stuff has gotten really expensive over the last couple of years. I think the first one I got was $40 shipped off of eBay. and I think you'd be hard pressed to find anything under $100 these days. But Brian, I can hook you up if you need.
I think I said this in another episode, but over the years, I think there's a thread on Clav that's pretty old now, but it was about like, show me your test rig or whatever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys have like elaborate setups or whatever, but then some of them have like the portable ones where it's just like the suitcase and that PS1 with the LCD flip-up screen. I think, Jordan, you have one of those, don't you?
I have one of those. Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
I actually have one of those also.
I mean, that might be a waste of a PS1. But anyways, one of my life goals is I'm going to do the 24 pack of hams, and I'm going to just build it into that. the 24 pack of hams.
The cardboard case,
but I'm going to build in some wooden supports so it's like a little bit rugged. And then you already have a handle, right? So I'm going to reinforce the handle. It's like just, and then if I'm really fancy, I can just build in a spot to actually hold a can of hams in there too.
Hams box.
Yeah. Anyways, that's kind of something I want to do just for fun because I don't know, because it's stupid.
I'm cool. Yeah, I've been working on troubleshooting the tapper, which I'll get into more in my update, which led me to this thinking because carting boards back and forth between garage and game, and it gets pretty tiresome.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I really hate about working on games is that when you have to like move your game out and pull the board out and I mean, you have a space in your garage, and I have a workbench now, but that is one of the shittiest things when you don't have a setup, right? You don't have a dedicated setup. So
yeah. Those are good games, or those are good boards to work on the bench. I think I've worked on that stuff with a bench because all you need is 12 and 5, and that one's easy enough to fire up to, and it sucks to get in and out of the cabinet.
Oh yeah,
it does.
MCR so cool. Sucks.
Thanks, guys.
I think the only good thing about MCR is you can test them without one of the boards for the most part. One of three, yeah.
Yeah, you can test without the soundboard.
There you go.
SSIO. So what's next?
Let's go into game room updates, and we'll save some of the other topics for next episode.
Well, since I touched on part of my update there, I guess I'll go first. I have been troubleshooting. I believe I mentioned it before that the root beer tapper went down, and I wasn't quite sure what it was. And I believe Brandon, you told me to switch around some of the Z80s, which I replaced both of the Z80s. But what I didn't realize was that there was a third Z80.
Yeah, there's a lot of Z80s.
And I didn't realize that was one that I also needed to look at. And I actually reached out to CD Jump because he is someone on Clav that fixes these boards, because I was thinking the Z80s didn't fix it because I got two new Z80s and put on there. And he's like, replace this other Z80. And I was like, oh, there's another one. And so I looked at it.
That's what I told you.
I'm telling you, you told me Z80, but I only looked at the two.
Yeah, it's always that CTC one. Is the one I go back a couple episodes or whatever it was, and that's the same one that failed on my Tron twice, and it's pretty notorious. Is that the CTC one, which I believe is like the input output?
Yeah, I know you told me, but I didn't realize that was the one because I think you said swap them, and so I was like, oh well, there's two of these other ones, so it must be these that he's talking about, and so. Yeah, that's the whole reason why I did those Z80s first. Oh. But Jordan was kind enough to lend me a partially working Bud Tapper board set. And so when I realized that was the chip I needed to test, and after I'd, you know, done replaces Z80s and reseated chips, which I like took these board this three stack board set apart, which is like a fucking puzzle to put back together. It's like if you don't put it back the proper way is like, how did this, there's like a middle part and this one goes to the back and you're like labeling parts of it. And luckily I'd taken a picture of the top of it and I was like, okay, I can kind of see how this is supposed to go. But yeah, taking that thing apart and putting it back together. And then, and one time I tried to bring it into the house, like just the two parts without the soundboard. And it was like, there's no way that it was like in a stack, like yeah. set in the back of the game where I could actually hook it up. So I had to just go and like reassemble it anyways. So I'm like reassembling and unassembling this fucking board stack.
It's like unpacking a fucking tent out of a box or an air mattress or like an air mattress. And you could never yeah. fucking get it back in without the box bulging. It's like
unfolding a map.
That shit's relatable.
And so, yeah. And so like I hooked the first thing after I did the Z80 thing is I hooked Jordan's board set up into mine to make sure it worked, because he's like, here's a working board set. Well, he said there was some sprite problems, but then, you know, regardless, it worked. So I like hooked his up. It's like, okay, it works. So, and then did mine. And so then I finally figured out that it was that chip. And then once I figured that out, which I need to order that chip now. Now I had to put it all back together, which these MCR boards are also shitty for all these tiny little pins.
Oh man.
Where they're like 28 fucking pins or something, and they're all very thin and very, you know, easy to bend.
The ribbon cable headers?
No, not those. That's another shitty part of it. But the ones that actually hook to the connectors, like going to the control panel or something like that. Even the video one is shitty. It's the only one that's like a solid. The ribbon cables are kind of solid, but the one where you put the power, the main power connector, it's a pretty solid. The pins are very sturdy, but the other ones are just these little tiny pins that will bend easily, and you got to get them all in the right direction just to get in there, just so. So like when I hooked Jordan's board set up, he's like, oh, did you play and see those sprite problems? I was like, no, I didn't even fucking hook up the control panel or any of that other crap, because it's such a pain in the ass. I just hooked the power and the video and that's it, just to test it. So I didn't get to see the sprite problems. But I did run the ROM check on your board, Jordan, and it seems to have a ROM problem.
Oh, shit.
It gave me the fast flashes on SSIO.
Okay.
So
me a ROM?
Maybe you have a bad ROM.
Hey, charge Jordan for a repair.
Yeah, burn. You got a ROM burning set up, don't you?
I do.
Oh, cool. Burn a new ROM.
Yeah, burn a new ROM.
See, you have to figure out which one. There's like so many ROMs on there. So yeah, and long story short, too late. Root Beer Tapper is now working again.
Hooray! Yay!
It's kind of funny because when you hook up the video without the SSIO on there, because the SSIO has the dip switches on it, that the picture is flipped, and for some reason the sprite characters are not lined up quite with the bar, so like the guys are like floating a little bit above the bar.
Yeah.
So at first I was like, oh shit, I wonder if that's going to be some other issue. But once I hooked the SSIO back up to it, it flipped it back, because I think I assume it's just in cocktail mode if the dip switch isn't there, maybe. But yeah, once I put that back on, it flipped back proper, and I was able to play Root Beer Tapper again. So I'll be ordering some more Z80 chips to replace that one, and Root Beer Tapper is good to go. So at the moment, knock on wood, all the games in my arcade are working. But yeah, I did get to go visit the Barthcade when I borrowed that board, and I brought my 6100 over there to test to see if the vectors were doing the same kind of jiggliness on Jordan's Tempest, and they were. Kind of. I'm not sure. I'm still not 100% sure if it's a monitor issue or a board issue, or if it's... I'm not sure. They seem to jiggle a little bit too much, and I may replace the pots on my game board just to rule that out.
Damn.
But it's working. I've been playing it, so we'll see.
We messed with the convergence a little bit, too.
Yeah, we got it converged pretty good, I think.
Yeah, looked pretty good.
But it was really nice being in the Barthcade. I was like, oh man, I miss being over here. We were all masked up and socially distanced and all that. But
sure.
It was nice to be down there. Jordan showed me his Cinematronics multi-board, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That Cinematronics thing.
Played some Barrier.
Raised Deluxe, yeah. Barrier.
That was cool.
Frustrating, simple game right there.
Swapping yeah. your man versus snake.
Versus Barrier.
Use the use vector.
Man versus Barrier. COVID-19.
Vector extension cable to make it easy to run other monitors off a game. Those are always good. Yeah.
Remember to put a barrier around your snake.
So that was good. The other thing that I did was I wired back up the double joystick dual button control panel that was originally on my what was Battletoads, which is actually an Atari cabinet, wired for JAMA, just so I could play, just because I wanted to play Space Dungeon on the ZooQue, which I did, and that game's really fun. I hope at some point when we can get back together to play games together, maybe we can play that one on an episode, because it's a really fun game. I haven't actually gone through like a whole dungeon. You don't have to. You can. There's an area that like an exit you can get to, but the more the dungeon you go through, I think you get a bonus if you complete the whole dungeon, and then there's more treasures you can pick up throughout. But yeah, that's a really fun game in a dual stick, similar to Robotron, but different, of course. So yeah, that's what I've been up to.
So you're 100% with games now,
as far as working.
Yeah.
In the arcade, yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
At the moment, knock on wood.
Knock on wood, green. That's a pretty good update there.
What you got, Brandon?
I just posted it in the show notes. If anyone's, because mine is more of a visual that only I guess you guys can see, but
you can put this in the show notes.
It's perfect for a podcast.
No, I'd have to clean up that shit. The only thing that I did is I just rearranged the game room a little bit. I used to have a creature kind of where Joust is in that picture that I showed, that I posted up there, but now there's an aisle behind creature, so there's three games in a row in that back space, and it actually utilizes the space a little bit better, even though it looks kind of weird in the picture, but I hate how deep Space Invaders is, because it sticks out so much. Just annoying. It's huge. It's like 4 inches deeper than any other conventional later classics, I guess. But I did this because the right of my desk is the heater vent for the game room. And it's been getting fucking freezing in here, and Joust was basically to the right of my desk. So when you walked in, there's Joust. And it was blocking the heater vent, and it's fucking freezing in here, so I just decided to move everything. And it actually took a long time because there's not very much space in here, so I basically had to play fucking hard hat in here and like move shit around.
Plotsky.
It was a fucking nightmare. Like I was like jumping over games. I was like crawling underneath creature because there's like that void underneath the pinball machines. And so,
yeah.
But now I basically have a space. Well, my desk can actually fit all the way into the closet, even though the closet's full of shit. So the plan is that when I get my other games from Dylan, this desk is going to move in more, and I'll have those two games there. And then hopefully by the time I get the other two games, maybe we'll be my basement will be clean to push those down there. So, but yeah, I'm hoping to fit Battle Zone and Space Encounters into that spot. Basically, Midway's taken over my collection. Valley Midway shit.
I like the Williams fanboy. I like your Williams row there.
Yeah, I basically sold every single Atari game that I own, so besides, I guess, Battlezone. So, yeah, that's basically my update. I still need to order a bunch of shit for Space Invaders, including like the T-molding, and I need to get a new bezel and work it. But all my games work, besides the sound in Space Invaders is kind of jacked. So that's kind of nice. Even after moving everything, all the games work, which is cool. So
I will go next because I have a somewhat similar update, which is that I got up into my workspace and I just cleaned that shit up. It was really impossibly cluttered. So I actually have some space to work on stuff, and maybe that'll motivate me to work on stuff. I did actually spend a little time with Brian. With Jordan's Quantum PCB, his repro that does not work.
This shit again.
I found another problem and I fixed it, but it still doesn't work.
Nice.
Do you think at this point it's better just to desolder the whole fucking PCB and just...
No.
All right.
Trying to fix a problem without understanding what it is not a recipe for success.
Just give it time.
It's been, how long has it been? Like 2 years?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Maybe a year.
There's forward momentum, though, so that's good.
I know, but it's time I'm not spending fixing my own shit, which is maybe not the best. What I should do is schedule a time to swap this empty Asteroids Deluxe Cabaret cabinet for you, Jordan, and pick up that monitor you fixed for me.
Oh, there you go. I do have it. Unless it's broken by itself.
Yeah, maybe it's broken again.
Yeah, so I could fire it up, make sure it still works, but yeah, it was totally working. Very nice.
No updates. Jordan?
I play Puyon since our episode. I really liked that game. And I get up to like 150,000 every time now.
Jesus.
Yep. Time to start looking for a cabinet.
I'm getting to the past the second bonus round now.
Wow.
Good game. And then it starts getting pretty hard. But yeah, it's fun. Getting first screen, you can get like 22,000-ish points if you're doing well. Timing those meat.
Meat.
Yeah, it's a great game. So I guess that's basically what I've been doing in the arcade, is come down and play Puyon once in a while.
And is that on your MAME cabinet or the BitKit?
Arcade SD.
Oh, RKSD, okay.
Yep, on the cocktail. So I can sit down casually. It's in a Midway cocktail cabinet.
Casually Puyan.
Yeah, I like that game. Maybe I'll start playing some Hard Hat, because I do have like a 60,000 point score on Hard Hat. So
that's a pretty good score.
Maybe I'll get Hard Hat world record.
Hard Hat.
Maybe it was 50-something thousand. I don't think it was 60, but anyhow.
I have a Hard Hat world record, but it's not certified by OSHA yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, have you checked out this videotape? I just sent it in.
Oh, man. I don't know.
Those were the days.
Yeah, and then I guess just hanging out with Brian. That was my game room update there.
Yeah. I wish I had more game room updates, but I don't. All my shit that I have left to do is just nagging shit, like putting leg levelers on games that don't have them, and just ordering parts and swapping them. It's almost not challenging enough to even dive into. I guess that's a good thing, though. I guess that's a good thing, though, because I don't know. When one of the games goes down, which has been a while, it's hard to find the time, which sucks, too.
We play pinball a little bit, Liz and I, and Magnus the cat. We're down here for a minute.
Yeah, I was playing Creature this week. The annoying thing on my Robotron is that the monitor is crisp as fuck, but Robotron has like the perfect rectangle border around it, and one of the sides is fucking distorted a little bit inward, and I just gave up on it because the monitor needs a cap kit, but I'm too lazy. So there's no way it's ever going to adjust out. So it's just one of those things where you don't really notice that when you're playing it anyways, because you're just so sucked into that game. So yeah. And now that it's up against the wall, it's even worse. I don't want to. The best strategy if a game's up against the wall is to tip it over and then work on it horizontally. And I've done that before. Actually, when I was rearranging the games, Qbert wouldn't turn on. I put my office chair in front of it, and I just tipped the game completely forward. And I opened the game, the back door up, right? And the back door is basically straight up in the air. And it was just one of the interlocks when I was moving it around. Got loose, so.
It's a good fix.
Yeah.
I've done that, too. Since I have a whole row of cabarets, I can usually just tip them forward with one hand and pull the back door off and extract the board that way.
It's like something you shouldn't do, but you're like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm not fucking pulling
like
the
so many things in my life.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. Should we call that an episode, my friends?
Yeah. Yep. So that's episode 56. Watch the exciting gameplay of Hard Hat. It was fucking riveting.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. Hold on to your hard hat. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us email at coinrejects@gmail.com, or you can send us a voicemail at
503-766-2263.
Now go play some hard hat.
Bye-bye.